May it please the court, Kate Aronson and Patrick Collins representing appellant Siddiqui Garden. By letter, the court indicated its intention to rely on the opinion issued last Thursday in the consolidated appeal of Brooks and Owens v. State.
The state said it was going to do that.
Correct.
Not, you said the court said it
I'm
was
sorry. Sent a letter to the court.
But we always rely on our prior opinions. But you can feel free to distinguish it.
Well, in Brooks and Owens, the court held that a trial judge who fails to give an accomplice instruction when a self-identified accomplice testifies commits plain error. This is a case on appeal following denial of post-conviction review. It's in the same procedural posture as Brooks's case. Unlike Brooks, in which trial counsel did not request an accomplice testimony instruction, the trial judge in this case actually raised it sua sponte to defense counsel. Defense counsel decided, asked for leave to consider it, and the record is then silent.
Well, just so I'm clear on your position regarding when is considered plain error, next to last paragraph of Brooks says effective March 15, 2012, any case involving accomplice testimony trial judges must now give our modified version. So isn't Brooks' perspective at least as to plain error?
Yes. Okay. With respect to trial counsel's failure to request it, that conduct fell below a reasonable attorney's performance based on Bland, which was in effect, and which was reiterated by this court in the Smith opinion.
Well, the way I read the Superior Court opinion, the Superior Court agreed with you on that point.
Correct.
And what the Superior Court said, consistent with Smith, is we may have ineffective assistance, but the question is, do we have prejudice? And the Superior Court concluded there was no prejudice because there was sufficient corroborating evidence.
Correct. And as this court stated in Brooks, with respect to prejudice in the procedural posture of Mr. Garden's case, appellant must demonstrate the trial counsel's failure probably affected the outcome. And in all candor to the court, considering the Owens case and the Brooks case and what this court has considered to be sufficient corroboration, appellant relies on the arguments contained in the briefs and has no further argument. In light of what's considered or has been considered corroborative, sufficient corroborative evidence in the recent opinion last week, we have no further argument.
Thank you. So are you going to address the second argument about the pecuniary arguments made by the state?
Yes, briefly. In Allen, the court indicated that the use of poverty or economic status to show evidence of guilt in a robbery case is inadmissible. The trial court in this case agreed that it was an improper remark. The state, in closing, on multiple occasions, at least four, referred to Garden's lack of money, his economic status, his past due bills as evidence of the fact that he participated in the robbery. The trial judge did not engage in a 403 analysis. It is and has been held in the Allen case that it is unduly prejudicial, that it injects irrationality into the proceedings. The central issue in this case was identity. The prosecution specifically argued that his economic status was evidence not only of motive, but of Garden's identity as the robber and murderer. Unlike the Erskine case, there was no curative instruction in Garden's trial, and as a result of which, since it is a central issue that was affected by this error, Mr. Garden's entitled to a new trial, unless the court has any further questions.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, Your Honors. James Wakely on behalf of the State of Delaware. In light of Ms. Aronson's rather brief argument on the first point, the state will simply suggest that all of the elements of all of the charges that Garden was convicted of at trial, to the extent that they were supported by the testimony of James Hollis or Christopher Johnson, were independently corroborated by other evidence or testimony adduced at trial. As to the second point, Your Honors, this is not Allen. In Allen, the evidence presented was that there were a string of robberies. James Allen was the lookout, and the argument the state made at trial that this court deemed inappropriate was that Allen had only one source of income officially, namely a overnight bag boy at a grocery store, and instead of living commensurate with that level of income, he had several cars, owned a home. It was the typical argument that he has too much money to only be obtaining it through his legitimate means. Essentially, it was the opposite of he's poor, he committed these crimes, and it is also suggestive of a 404B prior bad acts evidence.
In other words, he's rich, but he can't account for the riches.
Yes, Your Honor. This is not that. In this case, prior to each robbery, Siddiqui Garden stated specifically, I need money, I need approximately $200 in the first robbery, in the December 17th robbery, to buy a car. How do we know that that's relevant? Is because on December 18th, after taking $200 from the robbery, he buys a car. That car is then used to commit or to escape from the December
18th. That wasn't the only economic evidence the state introduced. You know, as a result of the search, they introduced unpaid bills and other things. So I can follow your argument in your comparison to Allen when you connect that testimony to this case and what happened. The question is, what's the basis for getting in the bills and the other evidence? And what the Superior Court seemed to conclude is that wasn't right, and maybe even the argument was improper, but once again, it was harmless in this case. But let's take one thing at a time. Under any theory, how do you get in the unpaid bills?
Well, the subject matter of the unpaid bills themselves was probably inappropriate. However, the bills themselves were certainly admissible as proof that he lived there. This was his home. These bills were found in his home. So the bills themselves would have been independently admissible. To the extent that it was inappropriate to point out that they reflected a past due balance, the state certainly concurs with the Superior Court that this was harmless beyond any possible doubt.
Harmless beyond any possible doubt because?
Because there was overwhelming evidence, certainly as to the murder and the robberies that, or the attempted robberies that occurred on December 18th. And there was certainly enough circumstantial evidence on the robberies that were committed on December 17th. The evidence, as this court characterized it, was overwhelming against Mr. Garden.
So your response to the defense would be, even if the trial court did do a 403 analysis, it's predictable that the court would have found, given the corroborating evidence, that the jury would not have been swayed by the unpaid bills or the comment about them.
Yes, Your Honor. If the court has no further questions.
Thank you. Thank you both. The court will take this matter under advisement, and we will recess.